Welcome back, DGS 204. George Rosenthal is here from Throttle. I'm going to talk to him in a minute. First, this is kind of funny. So at the end of the last break, while we were still on the air, my sweetheart Maria Kina, who we all love from the newsroom, walks in during the segment and has a piece of paper folded in half and puts it on my desk and walks away. And I'm like, oh, this
bad
is
news.
It. This
something's wrong.
This is either it says, I like you, do you like me? Pick one. Or I'm fired.
Check yes or no.
But then I got a little hopeful thought. I'm like, oh, it's not me. It's Rachel.
Because
she's putting together a council of fifth grade boys for some corporate thing. And I bet that's what it is.
Unfortunately, something I did say.
And it turns out it was just a well wish from Susan, who's been listening for 24 years and can commiserate about my mom and going to the place and falling and breaking her hip. And so thank you very, very much to Sue. Very nice.
Yes, very that's nice. Very nice.
Now, I'm going to send it back to Maria. I like you. Do you like me? I'm going to give her three choices.
Yes, no, maybe.
Yes, no, or maybe so. Yes, no, maybe so.
You're so saying there's a chance. George, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me in.
Yeah, missed you at opening day. Sorry about that.
I understand. I totally get it. Yeah.
What you got for us today?
I'll tell you, it's lots of good stuff going on. I'll bring up right away because Kevin and I were just talking about this, but I'm also wearing, of course, the St. Louis soccer gear. So
You're into that, man.
I'm telling you, it took one game.
Yeah.
I had never paid attention to Major League Soccer my entire life. Almost, I'll be 50 next month. I go to one soccer game and I'm hooked.
Yeah.
Totally hooked. Like, it's so fun to watch.
There's no energy like it in sports.
None. I have never been to a sporting event like it. Yeah. I'm so glad we have it here in St. Louis. It's so great. So Google DeepMind came up with an AI assistant, Kevin, that can predict the outcome of corner kicks no matter what.
Wow.
Yes. So this has been approved by football experts all in Liverpool, by Liverpool FC on the other side of the pond. 90% of the outcomes predicted by AI for the corner kicks were approved by all the coaches on the other side of the world there.
Okay, I'm not following. So
what it's doing is it's taking 7,100 instances of Liverpool FC soccer from corner kicks and then predicting how any corner kick in the entire Major League Soccer would come out, what the outcome would be.
So like if you show the trajectory, it can say that was a goal or it wasn't a
goal. Based on where the players are, the types of their skills, it takes all their statistics and then puts them on the field and runs through all the different scenarios in microseconds and can tell the coach what the outcome will be based on where the players are positioned and which players are positioned in the right spot.
Kevin, in general, this and whatever the corollary will be in baseball and football, to you, does that take the sexy out of it? Does it take the fun human element, I don't know, out of it? Or is it just yet another intellectual tool to be used to win sports?
I think it's probably more the second, but I still don't understand how it can factor in, like, it did the wind gust. Did this guy push this guy? Did this guy lean the other way? Like, I don't know how it can be that accurate when you have so many factors you cannot put in there.
I agree with you there. The wind, I don't know if it's in real time or not, but it's providing the coaches on the sidelines all the different types of scenarios if they put these guys in these particular places.
I mean, that's
places.
They're not using AI to do it yet. But that's basically what they do in baseball. They position it based on this. If this guy hits the ball in the air, this is where he hits it, so this is where we're going to play. When this guy hits it on the ground, this is where he hits it, so this is where we're going to play. It's not done with AI, but it's the same idea.
Yeah, exactly.
It is done with AI and teams have that. We don't know it.
That's true. You never know. Major League Baseball may not be letting that out. But you're right, though. I mean, what's the future of sports if you've got AI with all of the cameras watching? Of course, it can then watch that live footage and understand which players, based on the numbers on their jerseys, are in, take all their statistics, all their history, and then put all that together in a second.
At this point, Kev, is there anything against the rules about using technology for things like this?
Outside of there are things you can't do within the game, you can't record video, for example, but there's no rule that I'm aware of anything in terms of game planning, right? Like
using,
pre-game,
pre-game,
right?
Planning,
you can use video, you can use data. I'm assuming that means if you had it, you could use AI.
Oh, sure.
There's
sure.
no rough. There's nothing that says you can't.
Right.
But I again, predicting what's going to happen when a human being throws a baseball 95 miles an hour is impossible.
Right. Right. It's all based
impossible.
On. It's all based.
I mean,
on those
algorithms. The lighting changes. The
right.
sun goes behind the clouds. The wind kicks in. The hitter's looking for something that he's not getting. I mean, like. I don't think you're ever going to be able to right. predict with accuracy what's going to happen in advance of a play.
I agree with you there. It will never be perfect. I would. I think it may give you an advantage, but maybe
well, that's what they have
an
now.
Advantage, but yeah, just a little
what they
bit
have
of
now
foresight.
Are tendencies, right? You can
yeah.
have an idea of if this pitch is in this location at this speed,
right?
It's probably going to be somewhere in this range, and they're not nearly 90% certain
right.
on that. And I don't know. I don't know how you can. And maybe this is what I don't know. I don't know how you can factor in the unknowable. So
right.
you use football as an
right.
example. You might say that in this situation, this team does this play this percentage of the time, but what if they don't?
Right.
What if the yeah. left tackle gets a bad start and the defensive end beats him and it changes the timing of the play? What if the quarterback slips and falls? Like, there's just so many things that cannot be, to my understanding, put into an equation.
Right.
I wonder
right.
to what degree AI has been being used for gambling.
Oh, I bet it's. I guarantee I would, you that there are people that are doing it. If they aren't doing it,
yes.
they're trying to do it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that's 100% what's up. That's happening in gambling, whether especially when you have a lot of statistics, like in horse racing, for example, when there's so many numbers based around the different horses that are out there, to be able to plug all that in and give at least good chance of outcomes.
So technical question
yeah,
for you.
Yeah.
With the current computing skills, like the current computing capabilities.
Yes.
Because, you know, we talk about the quantum computing all the time. And I'm sure that will be a game changer for figuring all of these
oh,
things
sure,
out.
Sure.
But is there any difference between what an AI program could figure out versus just an algorithm that looks at these probabilities and adds it all up?
It's probably the exact same thing. Here's why I'm saying this. An algorithm that's fixed is going to give you results based on that mathematical equation.
Right, right.
But an AI algorithm can change in real time. So that's something where you have an AI
so
can adjust
own,
the
right,
algorithm
right.
on the fly and say, okay, well, the wind is 5 miles an hour from the northeast. Let's adjust that algorithm to make that happen. Whereas if you have
who
a standard...
That, who puts that in? Who enters that input?
So that's going to be up to however the data is collected. And of course,
you'll have
you know,
to have like a windmill
gonna,
at the time.
Yeah, and you know what's going to have to regulate that is going to be the leagues.
Right.
The leagues are going to have to say, okay, these teams can't do
fascinating.
That.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and all that data, it's being fed. It's something pretty interesting that's coming down the line.
What
yeah,
about that, things, and I'm being completely serious now, what about things like golf clubs or sniper rifles? Couldn't they be somehow set up where, like, we've all seen a sniper movie where it's like, okay, two clicks to the
right,
left.
Right, you got
to
yeah. account for the wind. You got to do
yeah,
all this. Yeah, yeah.
You would think that they would have automation for that where it would just do it in real time.
I'm oh, sure that's, if not I, existence, it's coming.
I would 100% agree that
wearing
the military
an earpiece,
has got
or maybe
that,
your glasses, or your,
George. Yes. Yeah, my glasses.
Wear
exactly
those glasses
right. yeah.
and then you can look at it and go, okay, the wind's blowing this way. Here's
that's
where you
right.
need to aim.
That's right.
Dave, that's a good point. I guarantee you, if that doesn't exist, it's coming.
Oh, it probably. I would imagine the military's already got that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that Apple just announced that they're working on, which I'm really excited about, is they're trying to get rid of, or they're going to use AI to get rid of trigger words to activate your at-home devices, your phone, your tablet, no. et cetera. So when you say, hey, Siri, I won't say her name, but the Echo word.
Yeah.
That's the trigger phrase, right? Well, they're trying to make it so that AI can acknowledge your response without ever having to say a trigger phrase again. So that I'm excited about because it gets you more involved with your device without having to use those phrases. Or if you accidentally say her name and she turns on all the time and you're like, no, I didn't want you to, I didn't want you to turn on.
Wait, maybe I'm misunderstanding this, though, but doesn't that just mean that they're listening at all times?
Oh, it
times?
Totally proves. In fact, it's funny you say that, Rich, because that's the number one phrase on the top of my page here, is it proves to everyone and myself that they are, in fact, listening to everything you're saying already. You just got to acknowledge that and get over it.
Or get rid of it, right?
Or get rid of it. It depends,
is
yes.
Is your best guess that they are... evil listening, but just to sell you stuff? Or do you think they're evil listening for other evil reasons?
No, I think they're evil listening because it's all about money. They okay. want to shove advertisements in front of your face at all times. They are going to sell that GPS data.
They don't
they're
care
gonna
if
sell...
you and your spouse are having a fight. They care that
no.
you said mustard and
yep.
Okay.
Yep. or we're going to have a barbecue next Sunday with 10 people over, and they pick up on that and start sending you ads on groceries. So that's something where we're getting to. Now, the one thing I will say, we talk about this all the time, but I really am excited about this as well. The EU finally, I mean, they got ahead of us, of course, on the bureaucracy. They have finally set up an AI regulatory organization in the EU, and it comes into effect in May, so next month. I'm very excited about this because AI needs to be regulated very badly. But there's some bans. They're banning high-risk AI, AI use in high-risk applications like in healthcare or education or policing. They're banning it completely. Wow. So AI will not be allowed in those industries. They're going to ban it for exploiting vulnerable people, which is great. If AI uses manipulative techniques, it's gone. The use of real-time facial recognition in public, that is banned.
Why did they get to it before us?
So I think we have a lot of bureaucracy here, and we also have 50 states that see things completely differently. And I think in the European Union, they kind of see things.
We also have a lobbying industry that's a little bigger and a little different than what they have over there.
We have some major tech here that's putting billions and billions into lobbying for AI. You're exactly right, Kevin, 100%. One of the things that I love, though, is the mandatory labeling of deep fakes. And without that, the AI companies can be shut down, fined, or be criminally held liable.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. Yeah. I wish we did that and we're already.
Yeah.
AI-generated content must disclose to anyone that's reading or using a chatbot or any type of content that it has been AI-generated. So kids can't cheat on their homework. You know when you're not talking to a real person on the phone. You know when you're not talking to a real person in a web chat.
Seems like a very common sense based set of laws.
Yes.
These are great things that I get just blown away that America has not set up
yet. I saw on Drudge today, but I didn't care enough to read the article, but that a small college has the first official quantum computer. Did you see this?
I did not.
Yeah, take a look after the segment, see what you think.
That's fascinating.
You think that'd be bigger news.
Yeah, you think, right now all it's been is IBM, Google, major multi-trillion dollar companies. The fact that that's going to be something we need to keep an eye on is how do you regulate quantum computing when it's everywhere?
Yeah.
And that's going to be a thing, because then you take the back end of some AI and you put that into a quantum computer, and now you better make sure you have regulatory things like the EU has.
Before we let you go, what are your three... So my daughter's a freshman at KU, you have kids. What are your three professions you would advise young people to go into, and three that you would say stay away from based on AI?
Ooh, that's a tough one on the stay away from. I can tell you immediately, and I know a lot of people are going to hate me for this, but the world's going to need a lot more lawyers because of what AI is about to produce. Unless we regulate things like the EU is already starting with deep fakes and so forth, the ability to fake somebody's video and then have that admissible in court, you're going to need a lot more lawyers. You definitely need the IT world. It's going to be out of control. Software development, network, cybersecurity, going to be unbelievable.
Even though AI can write its own code now.
Well, not yes, it can write its own code, but somebody's going to have to be learning AI prompts.
Okay.
So if you're going to get into software, it needs to be centered around artificial intelligence. It's extremely important.
Do you, I don't know quite how to ask this, but do you have to be smarter now to do IT than you did 10 years ago?
No, there's so many tools out there. Back in the very beginning of IT, yes, there was Google and the internet, and you could get your questions answered here and there. But it's just like anything in life. Any answer to anything you ever need is anywhere at your fingertips. So,
this is interesting. 60% of people polled, it was a pretty large polling sample, say that they trust Google over anything they've ever learned in their life. So if I think that the Civil War ended in 1865, but Google said it was 1879, I would go with that.
Wow. I agree with that.
I probably would, too. I would trust that more than my own memory in many on those kinds of things.
That's kind of scary in so many ways that everyone, and we do the first thing you say if you're out with a buddy, you know, having a drink, watching a baseball game, and somebody brings up a fact, what's the first thing everybody else at the table does? Let me check that on Google. That's kind of a scary scenario that we're believing whatever's out on the internet versus the previous research.
By the way, on your way out, if you want to know exactly precisely how geese are force-fed to make foie gras,
yes,
that boy right there. Now I'm wondering if Google lied about that.
Exactly. Maybe Google did lie about that.
225 DGS. Ricky Horton coming up in the next segment. Throwback Thursday, Rach.
Yes, throwing it back 77 years ago in 1947. Jackie Robinson signed his first contract with the Brooklyn Dodgers, making him the first black player in Major League Baseball.
That's so much later than I thought it was.
Yeah.
47.
Yep. And keep in mind, the it took a good number of years after that for the league to be fully integrated, right? I don't remember who the last team was. Maybe Boston, and it was maybe the 50s, like mid-50s, late-50s. So it took a while for it to just like, for it to be normal as opposed to, you know, a few guys here and there.
Before Jackie Robinson, was it just not done, or were there rules against it in the major leagues?
Oh, in Major League Baseball? I don't think there were rules. There's just nobody was going to do it. Nobody wanted to be the first. Nobody wanted the trouble until the Dodgers did. I don't think there was a rule that said you can't be of a certain skin color and play in Major League Baseball. I think that was just the custom, like societally.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are so much closer to all that stuff than we think we are.
Yeah.
72 years ago in 1952, Singing in the Rain was released, starring Gene Kelly and Debbie Reynolds.
Oh,
great movie.
That reminds me. I've never seen the movie The Joker with Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
But I understand The Joker 2 is coming out with Lady Gaga and that it is a musical.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It looks.
What?
I'm a curmudgeon, but I think it looks lame. But I've never seen The Joker either. So maybe it's the greatest movie ever.
I saw the first one and I liked it. It was obviously it's a totally different look at that character and all that. It's all about the character becoming the Joker as opposed to what you see in the Batman movies, which is this supervillain in advance. But why?
Yeah, why?
Maybe it'll be explained in the theory. Maybe it's all just in a fever dream of the Joker, and that's how they're showing it from like his mind. But either way, I'm out. I don't want a musical. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't want a musical either.
There's movie reviews by Kevin Wheeler.
Yeah. Musical? I'm out. Unless it's South Park.
Let's not go.
235 DGS. We hear about a couple people that kind of got in trouble online over the last couple days. So Shirley Jackson Lee, y'all know who she is. She's the in Congress. Been there forever. She's the one that the State of the Union runs up to the very front and is at the, you know, the edge to give the president a kiss every time. She was talking about the eclipse and was referring to the moon and discussing it with the kids about how it's a planet and made mostly of gas, which is why we'll never land on it because you can't walk on that. I seem to be right about a lot of people. Not everyone, but Rachel, you've been with me a long time. I think you would admit a lot of people who years I'll say like some wrong with that guy, and then there's some wrong with that guy, and Chip Gaines.
Oh, you've hated him forever.
And thank God now he was having a back and forth with someone online and said I find money boring. Everyone has money.
Oh, that's really easy to say whenever you have a line at Target in your own television network. Shut up.
Yeah, and when you've made a living being Mr. Cornpone, when your whole living is like, I made a tire swing and it's smarter than me. And then you have to turn around selling all your crap goods to poor people and then say, like, I find money boring. Everybody's got money these days.
I'm sorry, did he say this on Twitter? Because that just makes it even worse. I mean, if you're like arguing with a normal person and going like, oh, it doesn't interest me whatsoever. All right. Well, then give me your money, Chip.
If you're bored with it, just pass it all on us. We're good.
I've always been a bit annoyed by that certain type of, and Chip Gaines and Joanna really accurately kind of embody it. You see a lot of them like kind of in the Illinois side of the Metro East, which is why I'm so accustomed to them. And that is the like, I want to call them like country cosplayers, right? Like they're like, gee shucks, I just love going out and fishing on the boat. And it's like, well, but
like you at Casey's when you're looking for donuts.
But the boat is like $300,000 and you're fishing, you have a fishing sonar that's like, you know, that costs you like 30.
The
know,
Yellowstoning of America.
More than my house. Yeah, exactly. The new country is like extremely rich people. And I'm used to, I mean, my family going way back are like hill folk. You know what I mean? So I'm used to like.
This is a shock.
I'm used to that kind of country. So don't come in here with your.
When they
know,
were force feeding a goose, it meant something completely different.
Yes. So don't come in here with your country cosplay and be like, you know, like you said, like, well, we're just down on the farm.
Were you guys the Hatfields and McCoys?
Yes, and so it's like it's stealing Hick Valor when you do like the when you're obscenely wealthy but you're still like a good old boy. In my overalls.
I'm going to take out for Andrew on this one. It is an East Side thing, for sure. There are people, it's like, they're all decked out in camo. And I'm like, you live in a two-story house in a subdivision. Like, what do you do? Like, it's just weird. It's just a little odd.
It's become like an aesthetic. Whereas it used to be, you have no option but
hillbilly chic.
Yeah, you were a hillbilly because you had no other choice to be anything else. And then now it's like.
How far back in your family do we need to go to find the Hill Williams?
I mean, not that far. I mean, me?
Not that far.
Then Andrew tumbled out of the hill and into our studio.
And now he lives in a wooded area.
Yeah, well, he's upgraded.
His family back home thinks he's a senator.
I've gone from the mountains down to the hill, to the forests.
And what were you saying? Okay, so just a little inside baseball. On our Google Doc, Rach has, I don't know, a dozen stories that are relevant, and Wheeler has topic after topic after audio versus audio. So I get to Andrew's and it said, God, I wish I had more food options here.
Wait, me too.
I'm getting a little worn out by Papa John's and KFC every day. I mean, you know, we appreciate, you stay down with your day ones, you know what I mean? We appreciate KFC and Papa John's, but boy, I would like to eat something else.
I feel ya.
When I forget a lunch at home.
The good thing about KFC, and I was just saying this the other day, they switch it up so much and they have so many new items that it's like, all right, this isn't so bad. Like, you can try the new sauced nuggets if you're just tired of getting your normal thing over and over again. Like, they really do a good job of switching it up. But yeah, I'm also a little, like, I wish we had another option. Maybe like a healthy option. I would love
That's a true hillbilly. That's not a fake hillbilly.
I would love a nice sandwich, you know, like a nice deli.
Oh,
so,
if
I mean, there's
Jimmy
none
John's
of those, like,
up
down Wash Ave or anything.
Yeah, he rattled Wheeler's cage.
I'm just asking.
We don't have time, Kevin. I don't have time to go traipsing across half of downtown to get a nice sandwich. I would like if there was just one
downstairs.
He's
getting out his maps. He's going to tell you how long it takes to walk.
It's about to go bad.
I know how long it takes to walk.
Snarf's sandwiches is half a mile away.
That's like a 15-minute walk there and back.
It's a one-minute drive.
I'm not going to drive and try and park down. See, he's...
he's doing it.
I'm doing it.
He's baiting you, and you're taking the bait. He sees that shiny hook, and he can't help but go up and grab it.
At least you're starting to get it.
Know what you should get tomorrow? I'll buy if you'll fly. We should get Havana.
Oh.
Mm. The Cuban place. Remember how much we liked that?
Oh, yeah.
The one time we had the gumption to walk down there?
Yeah. Can I read the cutest text I've ever gotten in my life? This is from my grandma. She says, hey, Rach, I hear you talking about food on the radio. Me and Aunt Diana just stopped at White Castle and got the $5 bundle, and it's really good. Have a good day.
Nice.
Now I'm so mad at your grandma.
Good move.
Grandma knows the hookup.
Well, yeah, we talked about the $5 bundle on Friday during Fast Food News.
Yeah. It was a pretty interesting bundle.
I tried to get it, but there were too many people in line.
Oh. That's the one thing, like
my grandma and my aunt.
The moment that you decide you're like, you know, I'm going to go to White House. You get there, and there's like 19 cars in front of you.
Yeah,
and it ain't like Chick-fil-A. It's not going to move fast.
One of my most beloved food memories is going to the White Castle. We'd go to the one in Fairview Heights. We'd go to the one over in Florissant. Those were the closest to us when I was a kid, and there was no drive-thru, and it was going inside and eating on those big metal tables, and my dad wasn't known for fun, but he was fun at White Castle, and he'd let me eat as many as I could.
Really?
Well, I mean, they're like, I think they paid you a nickel.
They're probably like, I remember them being like 20 cents, 25 cents.
That was good times, though.
Yeah.
Nothing like a fresh White Castle.
Also, the local versions of the White Castle.
Crystal down south.
Like Crystal. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, even more local than that. We had one not where I grew up, not too far down the road, called Bates. And it was that, but it was just its own thing. So great. So great. Like five of them for a dollar.
I like a slider.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't like are fancy burgers.
Really?
Keep them away.
Oh, those are good too.
I don't want brioche. I don't want a Kaiser roll. I want a soft bunny bread bun.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm good with all of them.
I'm real hick.
So you don't want? No, you're not doing a pretzel bun.
I mean, if you make me,
I want it coming out of a plastic bag. Take it out of a plastic bag.
What about the burger? How about a throwback?
Yeah, let's go back to Throwback Thursday because we do have a couple more stories we didn't get to in the last segment. 58 years ago in 1966, 26-year-old Jack Nicklaus won his third Masters tournament and became the first man to win them back-to-back. Exciting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And 54 years ago in 1970, Apollo 13 blasted off on its mission to the moon, which was aborted after an oxygen tank exploded.
Good movie.
The astronauts managed to return safely thanks to the courage and pluck of Tom Hanks and Kevin Bacon.
Wheels, you into the Masters?
I mean, somewhat.
Yeah.
I mean,
and by Tiger's somewhat, there.
By somewhat, I mean, like, I'll see the leaderboard from time to time on my phone.
Yeah.
Remember when Dave Murray said that Andrew wasn't a real man because he didn't know where the Masters took place?
Yes, I do.
That was wild.
Yeah.
Happy 1 year anniversary.
I mean, I was in this shocked that you didn't know. I figured everybody knew that.
Not a real man.
Yeah.
One more throwback story here. 54 years ago in 1970, the Beatles' Let It Be hit number one on the singles chart and stayed there for 2 weeks.
Pretty cool. Welcome back, guys. DGS. Time to talk to our pal, Rick Horton. So, Dave, question, Rick. The first of the year. So, I get intimidated. I get freaked out. I get a little superstitious. Do you think that the Cardinals are experiencing something like this, kind of starting 2024 the way that they ended the last season? Or is that beneath a professional athlete? They're far too mentally strong for that. And as an organization, no, it may just feel like their little snake bit.
Well, that's a great question. And by the way, you know, I missed the Dave questions all winter. I don't know how I live without the Dave questions in the winter.
I can call you. We can get together once a week.
Yeah, please. Yeah, let's do that. We got to do that. We're in. Okay. But the reality is that I hear guys saying stuff now that it's almost like they're willing themselves to say it's not last year anymore. And so I feel like they're making an effort. But I think that kind of shows that at some level, you know, you still have to deal with it. You're dealing with the fact that you know that fans' expectations are high, and you know the organization's expectations are high for the team to do something better. And so you can't help but to begin every sentence with, "Well, last year we did this. This year we're doing that." So I think that's going to change over time. But I certainly think it's an underlying feeling.
Ricky, how about on an individual level, just to follow up on that? I mean, you know, the team is an interesting dynamic. It's 26 guys, and they're all kind of somewhere on their range of what they're capable of. Some of them are hot, some are cold, whatever. How about an individual? Like, how about, I'll just use Nolan Arenado as an example, a guy that basically spent a decade not struggling, and by his own standards, and he admitted he struggled with last year. How does that work for an individual when you start the next year either the same way you struggled the year before or maybe the opposite if you're going great and you keep on growing, going great?
Yeah, I think if you had a bad year the year before, obviously you'd prefer to get off to a good start so you can put it behind you. And what you don't want is doubts to sneak in. And so it's not only whether or not you had a bad year the year before or a good one, but it's how old are you? Think about that. How experienced are you? So if you're 20, I mean, there are 21-year-olds on the Cardinals, and there are 35-year-olds on the – I mean, so that is a vast difference in terms of their understanding themselves, their maturity, what they do. You've got a whole bunch of – I mean, Nolan Arenado's had an awful lot of times in his life where he's had bad stretches and good stretches, and that's the bank that you draw on right now. Now, you know, he'd still – if he had his druthers, he'd rather get off to a good start.
So let's talk pitching with a couple notable exceptions. And really, like the other day when they hit the 2-3-run homers, those are just two bad pitches. Other than that, you know, it came back very well. But happy with the pitching so far. How about you?
I am. I'm happy with the pitching. And there are two guys coming that aren't here yet in that Middleton and O'Brien that I think are going to even fortify the bullpen even more. I think the pitching's been good. The pitching, I think the last five games, the Cardinals have scored three runs in every game, and they have to score more runs. Right. And you win more games if you if your middle of your lineup does better and produces more, and that's kind of where they are right now.
Yeah, I mean, look at team ERA. It actually could be better, but you're like top five or six in the National League. So that part, yeah, that was a big concern, and part of that's the bullpen, which really, Rick, looks like it could be phenomenal if it keeps trending the way that it is. And I don't know how you view it, but I thought I saw a different, more aggressive Zach Thompson coming out of the pen than, you know, I don't know if it, I wouldn't call it passive necessarily, but maybe a little less urgency as a starter, maybe trying to pace himself. He seemed to come out the other day and just let it rip. So with him and Libertor and Romero on the left side and all the power arms on the right side, that feels pretty good.
Yeah, I think the bar is just going to be higher in terms of what success, what readiness is. And, you know, it's not that guys weren't working a season ago, but now you've got guys around you who are doing very well. You got to keep up your part of the bargain or you'll go do something else. And so I think the expectation is going to be good for younger pitchers to perform. Same thing with younger players. And I think it's made Ryan Helsley better because he's got other guys out there that can do. He's not a lone wolf anymore. He's not the only guy out there.
Right.
There are other guys helping him.
So let me ask my second Dave question. So back when I was an athlete, I was a tailback because I was fast and I wasn't big. My fullback was a fullback because he was big and strong but not fast. When it comes to starting pitchers and relief pitchers or closers, how early in the training do people, Rick and Wheels, go, that's a starter or that's a middle reliever? What is it about their skill set that makes you one or the other?
Boy, again, another good question. By the way, my limit on Dave questions is two.
We're
if I get three, I start to get a little woozy, and I have to kind of sit down. I mean, that's my limit. But I actually love the question because, you know, honestly, the reliever has two pitches, a starter has three. That's a simple way to say that. A starter has to have three different things they do. A reliever is going to power his way through two things for the most part. That's simplistic, but that's kind of what it is when you're looking at pitchers. This guy's got a plus-plus pitch, a swing and a miss pitch. We're going to put him at the end. And sometimes it is physiological. Sometimes guys, you know, you got the guys that can that are strong, and they got the guys that have great cardio and muscle endurance, and the endurance guys tend to be the starters.
And obviously on top of that, throw in guys that can throw strikes, right? Because it's hard to be a starter if you're using 20 pitches an inning because you'll be done in the fourth or fifth inning. So that sorts itself out.
Honestly, you would prefer everybody to throw strikes all the time, but you don't always get that.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because as a reliever, you can sometimes get away with a walk per inning because you're probably going to strike a couple of guys out if you're a hard thrower. It's not ideal. You don't want to do that. But you kind of can. Right. But as a starter, if you're doing that, you're just playing with fire. I mean, you're going to be out of the game in the middle of the game.
Well, I was a starter all through the minor leagues and never relieved in my life until I got to the big leagues. And Bruce Sutter taught me how to do it and others. And what I learned right away from being a reliever is if I'm only going to throw 10 or 12 pitches, I better not make a mistake. Hmm. I mean, how hard can this be to throw 10 good pitches? And it actually honed me in a way that I think was helpful to me. And then when I did get a chance to start, I took that relief mentality back to starting, and I think it was, again, a positive.
And, Rick, it always seems to people like me that I miss the old days. I'm an old school guy. I love that Gibson pitched eight times a week kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, do you think maybe we sometimes err a little too much on that side of giving rest, especially to the bullpen?
Well, one of the big problems in the game right now is injuries. That's the kind of the buzz thing going on right now. The number of pitchers that are getting hurt, and the thought is it's because they're throwing max effort all the time.
Uh-huh.
And if you throw max effort all the time, you know, we used to call those throwers, not pitchers, and no one threw max effort all the time. Greg Maddux used to say you throw about 92% as hard as you can, and that's where you're most effective. And I always thought that was true. Now, I don't know where he came up with 92, but you don't throw the ball as hard as you can, but now they're being taught to do that because that's how you get signed, that's how you get money, and that's how you get swing and miss, but it's not how you stay healthy and go multiple innings. So you don't have the Bob Gibsons anymore. Gibson, by the way, Dave, had 81 innings in 9 World Series starts. Do the math.
Jeez.
That's 9. He averaged 9 innings per start in his World Series starts.
Wow. Safe travels, buddy.
Thanks, my friend.